Hey, it's Buster Olney of the Baseball Tonight podcast. With ESPN Daily, you can wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN. It's told by the top reporters and insider on the planet. Plus, Mina Kimes does such a great job with it. The breaking news of SportsCenter with a deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
If you rewind back to just 1 month ago, Clayton Kershaw, Dodgers star pitcher, was preparing for a new season. He's 32 years old now. Where was his head at as he was eyeing his 2020 campaign?
The number of times when Clayton Kershaw will be able to exit a season feeling completely healthy and be able to have deeply focused, intentional work on getting stronger to enter the next season, that is a very small number. The career of an athlete is so truncated compared to the rest of us that it's not exaggerating or overstating it to say that for some people it has to happen now. And I mean, that's where I found sort of the spark of the universal in all of this, because in some ways, a lot of people are dealing with that exact thing. Like, what do you do when time has stopped and yet you feel it just reeling away from you?
For Clayton Kershaw, 2020 was looking like an opportunity for him to put his postseason demons in the past and finally win a ring. But with baseball on indefinite hiatus, and Kershaw flying blind without his normal schedule, it's unclear whether he'll even get that chance. ESPN's Wright Thompson was with the Dodgers ace when the sports world came to a stop. He takes us inside that day and Kershaw's life in limbo. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, April 15th. This is ESPN Daily. So, right, Clayton Kershaw is, of course, one of the best pitchers in the history of baseball, surefire Hall of Famer, but he's also well-known at this point for his postseason struggles. Where were you when the Dodgers lost to the Nationals last fall?
I was at my in-laws' house last year during the playoffs, and like everybody watched that game.
The 106-win Dodgers getting a second crack to reach their fourth straight NLCS. The deciding fifth game, Dodgers and Nationals, coming up next on ESPN.
He got brought in the seventh inning. They were up 3-1 over the Nationals. And what's amazing is even with his postseason failures in the past, the crowd at Dodger Stadium was going crazy when 22 ran out there.
And in comes one of the best pitchers of his generation, the lefty, Clayton Kershaw.
Everybody believed, including Clayton, he got the last out of the seventh inning.
Kershaw sets fires. Check swing. Did he go? Yes, he did. Struck him out. Kershaw comes in, punches out Eaton, and puts out the fire.
And he comes out in the eighth inning and gives up back-to-back home runs.
Swing and a high fly ball, well struck left field near the wall, and it's gone. He blasts one off of Kershaw. Swing and a high fly ball, well struck right center field. Way back there, gone! And we are tied! Back-to-back homers.
Two consecutive pitches. I mean, they're 58 seconds in which the Nationals hit two home runs and he's taken out of the game.
Kershaw just dropped into a squat position, didn't even look at where the ball went.
And this place is stunned.
The picture of him in the dugout afterwards just looked like a guy who'd had his heart ripped out.
So look at Kershaw in the dugout booth, and I mean, it's that blank stare of just what just happened.
Stephanie Epstein from Sports Illustrated described his eyes as red-rimmed.
And it is over! The Washington Nationals beat the Dodgers. They're moving on to the NLCS.
His quote after the game was,
"Everything people say is true right now about the postseason. I understand that. It's a terrible feeling. It really is."
I mean, this is about as low as a human being can feel in their work life.
It's a terrible feeling. No excuses. Just didn't make pitches and guy hit it over the fence twice.
I was just curious, what do you do after that? You have all this time to do nothing but think about it and then get yourself in a place to start over and try again. That seems way more impressive to me than the ability to throw a baseball, like the ability to do that. So the next day I sent an email to his agent, and you know, there were many agents and publicists and different things, but it all started then. I just started asking.
So the first day of the offseason, you email Clayton's agent asking for an interview. Then 150 or so days later, on March 12th, you finally get to be face-to-face with him. How did your day start out?
He picks me up at 6:30, right on time. He's never, ever late. And so, you know, man, we're just riding along, shooting the shit. I mean, you know, we were laughing about the, you know, he checks into hotels under fake names. He uses television characters. He's been Jim Halpert. He was Walter White for a couple of seasons. We went to Starbucks, and the name was Tony. So if you're a Starbucks or an Uber driver in Los Angeles and you're picking up a Tony, it might be Clayton Kershaw. And he's probably going to have to change that now. I'm sorry, Clayton. I told him I was at that World Series in Houston. You know, I timed it. It was a 13-second silence, but God, it felt like three times that sitting in the car. And then he just changed the subject to talk about the traffic, which is second to weather in terms of meaningless conversation that people have. If you're talking with someone and they're talking about the traffic or the weather, they do not want to be talking to you.
And of course, the reason he didn't really want to discuss it isn't just because of what happened last season. It's because of what was the latest and maybe most gut-wrenching in a string of disappointments. For me, right, what was frustrating about watching this latest occurrence was it just reinforces all of these bad sports takes that he chokes. That's his reputation. And it feels so unfair for one of the greatest pitchers of all time to be defined by that.
Look, he's had some bad outings. He's also been the victim of just staggeringly bad management. He's had some bad luck. I mean, we hadn't even talked about the Astros thing yet, where they just stole that one.
And the first pitch, a swing, and a high fly ball, deep left field, it's a tie game! Jumps on the first pitch from Kershaw, and Houston has scored four runs here in the fourth inning to tie it up.
Clayton Kershaw, who has one of the greatest curveballs and one of the greatest sliders that have ever been thrown, threw 51 breaking pitches, and the Astros swung and missed at zero of them. Maybe no one was personally damaged more by their cheating than Kershaw.
And the Houston Astros have claimed that city's first ever World Series championship.
The Astros series is important to this, and it is damning. But also, right, there's the National League Division Series against the Cardinals, the championship against the Cubs. I mean, there's just a lot of examples at this point.
The guy has thrown a lot of postseason innings, and he is catching the best hitters in the world at their very best and most motivated. There is a case to be made that it's bad luck, but you're right. I mean, he has gone out when the team needed him to be Clayton Kershaw and was a average major league pitcher. And, you know, you have to deal with that. When you're doing the final accounting of him throwing a baseball, my God, that's a huge part of it.
So you were spending the day with Clayton to learn more about how he's processing all of that. But it wasn't a normal day for either of you. It was the day after the NBA suspended its season because of the virus. So, right, you arrive at the Dodger facility together, and then you immediately realize there are serious conversations happening about the fate of the baseball season. What was it like there? What was the scene like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm out in the lobby of the Dodgers facility, and he's back through these double doors down this hall where the clubhouse and the lunchroom and all that stuff are. The Dodgers had shut down the clubhouse, and you know, everybody was freaking out. So he was sitting back there with his teammates, watching the news, wondering if they were going to have a season, wondering if they didn't have a season and there were no fans, how they were going to get paid, worrying about where they were going to live and what to do with their families, worried about their parents. I mean, the same thing that everyone was doing. It was crazy. I mean, the night before, that Wednesday night, an editor, Rachel and I, had gone to the Giants game. and it was packed. I mean, like, we almost couldn't find a place to park. I mean, we missed the first inning because there was so much traffic and so many people that we couldn't park. I don't know. I mean, it sounds crazy and naive now, but I just sort of thought that I'd be following a ball player around. Pretty normal day. He came out to check on me. I think he felt a little guilty that he'd sort of promised this ride along and we're going to go, you know, he's going to go pitch and work out and going to go see the whole thing. It was interesting the degree to which he stopped being an athlete and I stopped being an annoying person, following him around, writing it down in a notebook.
He's also a pretty unique athlete, I suppose, to experience this kind of day and that sort of level of randomness with, because there's absolutely nothing random about him and his approach.
Well, I mean, that's what's interesting to me. I mean, I thought a lot about it because every Kershaw profile is like, it's 6:20, he takes a sip of water, and 6:26, he runs onto the field, and at, you know, 7:02, they sing the national anthem, and this goes on and on and on. It sort of hit me. I was like, well, what do these things have in common? Like, what is the through line? And it's not so much that he's obsessed with controlling everything. It's that he's sort of obsessed with time and managing it and understanding that it is currency to be spent. So to see someone who is so intentional about how to be peak himself, if that's even a phrase, on March 26th or on opening day, to see that sort of start to disintegrate, sand through the fingers, was very interesting.
Did you get the sense that day that any of that had even occurred to him yet? Because at the time, we didn't know, you know, how long this is going to drag out, what these sort of formless days would even look like. Did he seem worried about the fact that, you know, he might not be able to follow through with what, you know, should have been a very good season?
Oh, yes, definitely. Was already like, they need to tell me what day it's going to start, because I don't know what to do every day if I don't have a day off in the future to back time all this stuff. I mean, that's the thing he kept saying, is I need a date. Like, I need to know what to do.
Coming up, how do you prepare for a TBD opening day while under quarantine with your wife and three kids? Okay, right. You've been sitting at the Dodgers training facility. You're watching the news, and it's pretty clear at this point you're not going to see Clayton Kershaw work out. When did you guys just decide to get out of there?
I don't know. He just came out and was like, let's go home. You know, I was like, okay. We walked out. There were still fans out. He and I both just couldn't believe that. We were like, there's still people out there trying to get autographed. The craziest thing happened. We're in the car and just riding along talking. His phone rings and I look down and the name shows up on the caller ID on the console. And I just went, oh. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, but it was Sandy Koufax.
Oh.
And I was like, I know, exactly. He was like, do you mind if I answer this? I'm like, you know, I tried not to look so over eager that my head spun off. And I'm like, no, go ahead. It's very clear that they like and respect each other. They call each other Clayton and Sandy. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear that it was just interesting to hear them talk, because the number of people who can understand what Clayton's life is like is very small. And the number of people who've almost time traveled into the future and know things about his life and what it's going to be like, that number is even smaller.
So what do they talk about?
You know, it was two pitchers talking. It wasn't an 84-year-old and a 32-year-old. It was two guys who, they could have been talking. Like, there's that famous John McPhee story about the guy who makes birch bark canoes. I mean, mm-hmm. It was like they were talking about making canoes. I mean, they were just talking about their life's work.
So, obviously, Koufax and Kershaw are part of this sort of elite group of greatest of all time, right? The difference being, and now I feel like a jerk because I'm bringing it back to this, but it's unavoidable, the postseason legacies and the postseason records. Is Kershaw, do you think he's cognizant of that? Do you think it weighs on him?
I don't know. I mean, I think he will be later. In order to even have a chance to be Clayton Kershaw, you have to be able to process success and failure and build a story to tell yourself about yourself in a way that is every bit as rare as having the arm that can make the ball do that in the air, right? It's easy to go back out there if you keep succeeding. Having those failures and continuing to go out there and try is deeply impressive.
So you're saying all we got to do to be great, right, is be less petty?
Well, yeah. Be less petty and just not live in a world in which you're defined by other people, which unfortunately is the world.
So how'd your day with Kershaw end?
I think both of our minds were elsewhere almost at the very end. He dropped me off at my hotel. He was going to go meet his family. I was going to go try to find some hand sanitizer. But it was very much, you know, thanks for the day. I appreciate it. It was a weird day, but lovely. I mean, when I'm reporting, my phone is off. And so I got back to the hotel and turned my phone on and called my wife, Sonia. You know, she was like, you have to go get Clorox wipes and hand sanitizer for your flight. All of America has been freaking out over coronavirus while you were sitting out at the Los Angeles Dodgers with your phone off.
So when was the next time you got in touch with him?
It's funny. The only other time I've talked to him is he walked. I was on a Zoom call with Ellen, his wife, and he walked by and waved.
When was that?
A couple days ago.
How has he been spending the time? How has his family been spending the time?
Oh, man. They've been his son. They love to play baseball, wiffle ball. They've been doing a lot of that.
Go, 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 go.
Ellen talked about how he's in the backyard throwing into a net, and sometimes he throws into a tarp. And, you know, he's trying to sort of stay in this narrow sweet spot where he's not burning up his arm, and yet he's going to be ready. You know, his workouts are done every day by 11:30, cooking breakfast, playing Papa Shot out in his gym.
Not quite the record.
How'd you feel? 128?
Yeah, I missed too many, but Jock can't beat that, so sorry.
I was worried about how I was going to report, and then it turns out that Ellen was filming all these funny videos of them playing at their house and sending them to the Dodgers.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, everybody.
We are going to show you a day in the life of the Kershaws.
We're going to show you a day in the life of the Kershaws.
One Kershaw.
Cooper is a part of
the... She talked a lot about how, you know, this is a weird window into what retirement's going to be like. He's in there flipping pancakes and being a dad, and they're watching movies and doing cannonballs in the pool. She realized that how nostalgic they're all going to be for the sound of a baseball whizzing through the air and then whapping against a tarp or a net once all of this weird baseball circus is over, however many years from now that is. She's like, you don't really understand what a pitcher like Clayton's fastball sounds like until you can hear it. And it's terrifying. I mean, it's buzzing through the air. So she talked about how she's going to be nostalgic for that sound.
Hey, guys, finishing the day, reading some books, eating some waffles. It's been a good one. Thanks for hanging out with us. Y'all stay safe and hopefully see y'all soon. All right. See ya.
Did you get the sense from his wife that they're almost enjoying this extra time with him, this sort of liminal period, or that they want baseball to begin?
I mean, I think both, like full-throatedly both. I mean, and I understand those are contradictory, but I mean, that feels very human to me. He wants to go win a World Series. He wants to go be number 22 for the Los Angeles Dodgers, the guy that people count on. He's at home in Texas in April, which feels weird. His body knows he's not supposed to be here. Clayton Kershaw's body wants to know why the hell it's not in Los Angeles. You know, I mean, I'm sure like on a subliminal physiological level, it feels weird.
Right. Obviously, this lost season, or rather season on hold, is affecting all athletes, all baseball players. But it seems to me that for someone like Kershaw, who is getting older, who has so much to gain at this point in his career on a team that was regarded by many people to be the favorite going into the baseball season, well, he would lose more if this season never happened.
I guess I'd like to let Ellen Kershaw answer that. I just pulled the story up. She said, he is healthier than he has ever been. So I think that that has been frustrating because I think he was so ready to go into the season. But part of me also wonders if taking these months off is just going to be more time for rest on his shoulder. And then she said, you know, Clayton has pitched so many innings. And that really hung there in the air. It's a story about one working person with a family dealing with the coronavirus. It'll be a long time, and only with the benefit of hindsight will we understand sort of what was lost and what was gained.
Thanks so much, right?
Anytime, Mina. I really appreciate it.
Coming up, a different look at Jackie Robinson Day. Here's another story I want you to know. Every year, on April 15th, Major League Baseball celebrates Jackie Robinson Day, commemorating the anniversary of the date he debuted with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947, becoming the first Black Major League player in the modern era. This year, the league is celebrating the occasion virtually, and our colleagues at The Undefeated are also marking the anniversary online with a series of stories. One in particular that jumped out to me was by Andrew Disler, who actually didn't focus on Robinson, but instead highlighted the experiences of ballplayers like Phillies third baseman Richie Dick Allen, who was signed by the team out of his Pennsylvania high school in 1963, more than a decade after Robinson debuted. At Allen's first game with the Arkansas Travelers, a white supremacist group picketed outside the stadium. According to the piece, he and his wife, who were afraid to leave their home, also faced racist attacks in Philadelphia. Despite this, Allen would go on to play for 15 seasons, winning awards like Rookie of the Year in 1964 and AL MVP in 1972. Another player Disler wrote about was Bob Gibson, who famously played for the Cardinals in the 60s and the 70s. When he joined the team, they were managed by Solly Hemus, who was openly bigoted and frequently told Gibson to quit baseball and return to basketball instead. He was fired in 1961. Gibson, of course, went on to become one of the greatest pitchers in baseball, but he still received hate mail and threatening phone calls, and his house was pelted with eggs and bottles. There are numerous stories like this, of course, and Disler tells them on this day in particular not to downplay the impact that Robinson had on the league, but to stress how far it still had to go. Jackie Robinson may have opened the door for other Black players, but once they walked through, what they encountered wasn't always pretty, and that ought to be remembered too. I'm Mina Kimes. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.